So, this is the time for a Dhamma sermon. So, actually, we were discussing Kayagata Sati Sutta for, I think, several months or several weeks, and we were able to complete it on last week. And now I have selected another sutta. This, in a way, a short sutta available in Samyutta Nikaya, in Satipatthana Samyutta, but it's a very important sutta. It clearly shows three stages in the mindfulness practice. Now, Kayagata Sati Sutta actually has shown the first stage, and if we think that is the end of it, so then we go wrong. On the other hand, if we think that we can do without it, that is also we can go wrong. Rather, this sutta, what you call as Vibhanga Sutta, give a clear picture of the whole path. So this sutta available in Samyutta Nikaya, Satipatthana Samyutta, where many related suttas are combined or related suttas are analyzed together. And in this particular sutta, Buddha is giving a kind of an overview of the whole practice, how one has to build up in the continuous path. So first, Buddha says we can encounter the establishment of mindfulness. That is where the Satipatthana. And then one has to develop it. Just establishing mindfulness is not enough. One has to further improve oneself. And that basically is the turn towards the wisdom. So that is what you call as the Satipatthana Bhavana. And then there is a separate path that how one can cultivate this development, how one can enhance this development, how can continue this development. And that is where the Patipada sort of a practice is coming to the picture. So we'll go one by one. So what is this strategy Buddha is talking? The first aspect what Buddha telling is the what you call as Satipatthana Bhavana, sorry, Satipatthana, that is where one has to establish mindfulness. So that is the complete theme of Kayagata Sati Sutta. So what are the various techniques available in establishing mindfulness? And that is, we have already discussed, dwells contemplating the body in the body, Kayanupassana. So you can establish mindfulness on breathing. So in-breath and out-breath can be your attention, you can be your focus. So there you can establish mindfulness. Say you can establish mindfulness on various postures. Say you are sitting and you can keep your attention there. While standing, you can keep your attention there. While walking, you can keep your attention there. While lying down, you can establish mindfulness there. So these postures are another way of establishing mindfulness. Suppose you are brushing your teeth, so that becomes a bodily activity where we can establish mindfulness. Say you are wearing clothes, so that is an activity where you can maintain mindfulness. Suppose you are having your meal, while you engage in that activity, there also you can establish mindfulness. Suppose you are stretching limbs or you are making kind of an exercise, bodily exercise. There also you can establish mindfulness. And suppose you are talking with another person, listening. There also you can establish mindfulness. So likewise, there are so many bodily activities that we day to day engage with, and all these activities are in a way help us to establish mindfulness. And the next part is to establish mindfulness on Vedana, feelings. So we have pleasurable feelings, we have painful feelings, and most of the time we have neutral feelings. So if we try to be mindful about these feelings, so these feelings themselves become a very good source for us to establish mindfulness. Suppose you are walking. So while walking, there are various sensations that we can feel. Maybe rough, maybe cold, maybe heat, or maybe smooth, cold, so many things. probably all these things we can look at in the feeling tone, rather than looking at them with the elements level characteristics. Instead, we can look at them as all feelings. They are neutral feelings. On the other hand, suppose you saw someone. So immediately sort of say pleasurable feeling arise in you. So there you recognize, okay, that's a pleasurable feeling. Suppose you hear a song. So instead of thinking about the song, instead of thinking about the singer, instead you can recognize the pleasurable feeling. So this is where we are trying to establish mindfulness on feeling. Suppose you encounter, say, your leg gong and hit on a stone, then yes, there's a kind of a pain arising. So instead of thinking about it, you can simply establish mindfulness on that pain. So likewise, you can use various vedana feelings to establish mindfulness. And then there are various thoughts arising in the mind. Lustful thoughts, angry thoughts, maybe resentment, resistance, jealousy, maybe loving kindness. Many different types of thoughts are there. So if we are able to use them just to establish mindfulness, so that is another avenue available for us to establish mindfulness. So at the beginning it is difficult because we cannot really establish mindfulness on various thoughts because they are very attractive, or sometimes they are very subtle and swift, so they immediately pass away so that we can't really hold them. So that is better start with Kayanupassana and Vedananupassana. But later, once we develop mindfulness, so even the thoughts are a sort of a very good source for us to establish mindfulness. And then Dhammanupassana. Say when you are able to recognize various hindrances available in the mind. When it is lustful, you recognize. When it is angry, you recognize. When it is feeling lethargic, you recognize. When it is restless, you recognize. When it is regretting, you recognize. When you are going through some doubts, you recognize. And again, sometimes the mind is fairly beautiful. Say it is very mindful, so you are aware of it. And it is really sharp, investigative, and then you recognize it. And there is sometimes kind of a happiness available, pleasure available, you recognize it. And sometimes it is neutral, you recognize it. And sometimes you feel like floating, very light, you recognize it. So likewise, there are various enlightenment factors available in the mind. Time to time, they come to the surface. There you can recognize. And sometimes you see someone, and immediately kind of an attachment arises in the mind that you can recognize. Or else kind of a resentment arises in the mind that also you can recognize. Say you are hearing certain sounds. At that time kind of an attraction happens in the mind. So you can recognize. Or you want to get rid of it. Go away from it. So that desire you can recognize. So likewise, in terms of the faculties, that is eyes, ear, nose, tongue, body, and the mind. Whenever the corresponding objects are meeting with those internal organs, so there are certain feelings arising, there are certain sensations arising, there are certain desires arising. Those we can recognize. So likewise, we can use this whole experience, bodily experience, mind experience, as a way of establishing mindfulness. So this is typically we call as the Satipatthana. So this is a mere establishment of mindfulness. And there also the attitude is important, where you maintain sort of a effort. You are not giving up. Even though you have to face certain obstacles, you are not giving up. You have a sort of an effort. And then you are able to clearly recognize them. Say when certain elements are there, so you can recognize them. This is the hardness, this is the softness, this is the roughness, this is the heaviness. So you can clearly distinguish. Sampajanyo, sampajano, this clear comprehension is there. And then you are quite mindful, the satima that is there. And then if there are various thoughts coming and sort of bugging you, trying to sort of distract you, so you can overcome them and again come back to the job, come back to the establishment of mindfulness. So therefore, throughout the practice, so we have these four qualities, what we call as ardent, clearly comprehending, and then mindful, as well as, so we are trying to sort of cut off from the other distractions and try to sort of selectively pay attention. Because now we are kind of in an experiment. So there we are selectively pay our attention so that we can really learn from it. What are the objects that under our scrutinization? So we are trying to observe them very clearly, very sort of properly. And so that we can recognize, we can understand what is really going on there. So this is where we call as the typical satipatthana. So the main goal, main objective is to establish mindfulness. Now this is not the end. Now when we consider whole Kaya Gata Sati Sutta, so this is where the prominence is given, where emphasis is on establishing mindfulness. Suppose there's a ship on the sea, and if you want to hold it tight, if you want to keep it stationary, then there are sort of you are putting an anchor, so you bound to a very strong place, and so that the ship may become stable, it does not move here and there. Similarly, we can use body, feelings, thoughts and various other phenomena to establish mindfulness so that the mind does not waver, mind does not distract. And after that, now we have to go to the next section, or the second step, that is called Satipatthana Bhavana, the development of the establishment of mindfulness. So now we have established mindfulness, now what we have to do? So that is where the Satipatthana Bhavana, the meditation, come into the picture. So there Buddha explains how one conducts Satipatthana Bhavana. That is where he is trying to look at these various phenomena and how they are arising, how they are coming to the picture. There was no hardness, now hardness is arising. There was no heat, now the heat is arising. There was no heaviness, now the heaviness is arising. There was no vibration, now the vibration is arising. So likewise, whatever the phenomena, you can see how they are arising. Suppose there are feelings. There were no feelings, but now there is a new feeling arising. New pleasurable feeling arising. New painful feeling arising. New equanimous feeling arising. So likewise, you can use feelings, and your main goal there is to simply recognize the arising aspect, arising side. Suppose you are watching the mind, there also you can recognize how a thought arising. What is the beginning? How is the beginning? What is the first sapling of a thought? You can recognize. So that is where the samudaya, or the arising nature of a thought, you are trying to recognize. Suppose you are looking at your mind, observing the mind, there is a sapling of mental image, sanya, going to appear there. So if you can, if you have a sort of a clarity of mind, there you can recognize the sapling of a mental image. Very subtle mental image is now popping up in the mind. So this is where we are trying to recognize various, maybe the element characteristics. Or now we can go even to the feelings. When there is a pleasurable feeling arising, so we can immediately recognize. When there are painful feelings arise, one after the other maybe, or maybe several feelings at a given time. So if you are keeping your attention at those feelings, you can recognize those pleasure, painful feelings, how they are popping up, how they are coming up, how they are coming to the picture. And if you sort of very clearly, very precisely look at them, probably you may be able to recognize the causes as well. Say, for example, while you are very clearly, very precisely keeping your attention on a particular feeling, and that feeling suppose disappeared. Now you are very closely looking at it. Now a new feeling is arising. Just before the new feeling is arising, there may be a kind of a contact happening there. Passa paccha vedana. So probably, if you are so careful, if your attention is very precise, then there's a possibility to recognize this contact as well. And on the other hand, suppose you do a walking meditation, mindful walking. There, as your leg touching the ground, so once this contact happens, then only the feeling arises. Suppose your left leg is on the air, not yet has touched the ground. There is no significant feeling arise there. There may be still feelings, but not that hard feelings, not that gross feeling. But suppose you are now hitting your leg on the ground. There's a big contact happening there. As a result, there's a new, fairly noticeable feeling is arising there. Now this contact has paved the way to arising of a new feeling. Suppose you are trying to observe the mind. Various thoughts, they are not sort of immediately coming to the very high level, but the very natural, very sort of gradual arising is possible. There's a little, very minor kind of image appearing, and now you are noticing it, you are adding a little thought to it, a little vitakka to it. Now you are adding another thought to it. You are adding few more signs to it. You are adding few more thoughts to it. You are adding several signs to it. You are adding more and more thoughts to it. So likewise, now a sort of a plant of thoughts, a tree of thoughts are now arising. But if you go to the very source, if you go to the very beginning, it's a simple thought. It's a simple image, a mental image. That is the one sort of the beginning. So likewise, now you are trying to see the beginning, how these thoughts are arising. Now, typically, if our mindfulness is weak, then we can't do it. Because we only notice them when they have grown to very high extent, to very high level. When the mind becomes sort of obsessive, then only we can notice it. But more and more we develop mindfulness, so we don't need to wait till that. But the mind is fairly sensitive, mind is very clean, very clear, so that when the initial thought is arising, when the very beginning thought is arising, you can recognize. So this is where we are trying to see the samudaya. We are trying to see the causes and we are trying to see the beginning of the aspects. Suppose there are various hindrances. Suppose there are lustful thoughts. Now, assume there was no lust. Now you are simply observing the mind. Now there's a sort of a mental image arising there and you have given some value to it. There's a kind of a pleasurable feeling arise due to that. And you are adding few more, images to it. You are beautifying it. So several more pleasurable feelings are arising, and several thoughts also arising. And slowly, lust is growing. Kind of a lustful thoughts are now growing. So likewise, if you are careful enough, if you are refined enough, you can recognize how these lustful thoughts are arising. And ultimately, it can become even a fantasy. But if you see the beginning is a very subtle, very refined level of image, maybe mental image. So So if you consider the complete proliferation process, papancha, Buddha says these mental images, sanya, signs, perceptions, are the source. Sanya nidanahi papancha sankha. Buddha says very clearly, these mental images, whatever the signs popping up in the mind, are the source, are the beginning, are the root of a big story growing in the mind, a big proliferation growing in the mind. So if we are able to go to the root, if you are able to go to the beginning, then we call it as yoniso manasikara, wise reflection. And we are trying to go to the exact causes. We are trying to locate the exact, root. We are trying to see the beginning. So the yoniso manasikara is there. And the other side, when sort of an element characteristic is fading away, suppose hardness is there, it has arisen, but after a while it passes away, it fades away. Now you can recognize that as well. Suppose there's a softness, it has arisen, and you can see the passing away side as well. It has gone, it has disappeared. Suppose there's a kind of a vibration. There are so many vibrations are happening. Not only seeing the arising side, but you can recognize the passing away side as well. How one arise and then pass away. Arise and then pass away. So that is the nature of a vibration. It's like a wave. Arising is there, then the passing away is there. Suppose you are feeling, you are observing a feeling. So it's a pleasurable feeling. And now a pleasurable feeling has arisen. And you are clearly seeing it, clearly recognizing it. And after a while you recognize, okay, it has faded away. It has disappeared. It has gone. Another time, another place, another pleasurable feeling arises. And you are clearly looking at it. And then that also has gone. They can't last for a long time. They have the nature to pass away. And suppose there is a painful feeling, sort of an itching arising. Now you can recognize, okay, there was no itching, but now there's a itching feeling available, and you are now clearly recognizing it, you are closely paying your attention there. And after a while, probably you can recognize it has faded away, it has gone, it has passed away. Suppose your breath, you are keeping your attention at the nostril, and as the in-breath happens, you can feel kind of a touch sensation. You can feel kind of a cool sensation. That is the beginning of cool sensation. And after a while, this cool sensation has disappeared. It has gone. And if you consider the out-breath, exhale, there's a beginning. How a sort of a warm feeling is arising. How a kind of a heat is generated. Very subtle heat. Kind of a warmth is there. And after a while, once the out-breath has disappeared, so that arisen feeling also has disappeared. It has also gone. Suppose you consider rising and falling of the abdomen. So at the beginning, there's a rising. You can recognize the beginning of the rising. There's a middle and then the end. And there is nothing afterwards. And now the beginning of the falling. Now the middle. Now the end. Then there's a gap. Then the next rising is available. So likewise, now you are able to scrutinize how these various phenomena, how they are rising and how they are passing away. How they are rising and how they are passing away. Samudaya dhamma anupassīva kāyasmin viharati, vaya dhamma anupassīva kāyasmin viharati. Samudaya vaya dhamma anupassīva kāyasmin viharati. So Buddha very clearly mentioned, so this is where the meditation, this is where you see the impermanent nature. They all have the nature to come and go. They all have nature to arise and pass away. They are not permanent. So if something is arising and passing away, very transient, very impermanent, can we expect a lasting happiness from it? It's impossible. Because is transient, it is constantly changing. Whatever the phenomena, this phenomena is subjected to this kind of a transient nature, this kind of an impermanent nature. They are constantly arising and passing away. All the phenomena, all the conditioned phenomena have the nature to arise and then to pass away. And hold this picture, hold this behavior is out of our control. So things are happening due to various causes. We can simply look at it. Either we like it or not, it is happening. So there you can recognize the whatever the process, keeping it under your control is very difficult. It's very limited. By looking at your own mind, you can recognize, okay, you can't keep control of the mind. You can't keep control of the various thoughts when they are arising. You can't invite them to arise. And you can't invite them to pass away. Rather, you can observe them with an open mind, with an open attitude. And you simply allow them to come. And you are not bothered. You are not shocked. But rather, you equanimously look at them. And then, since they have the nature to pass away, they simply pass away. They simply go away. And we are undisturbed. So likewise, in this sutta, now Buddha is telling us about the Satipatthana Bhavana. After establishing mindfulness, how one can continue that aspect, that established mindfulness, to further growth, to further understanding, to further improvement of our wisdom. So that is where you have to clearly examine these phenomena and how they have the nature to arise and they have the nature to pass away. So with that, I like to conclude today's short Dhamma sermon. Next week, actually, we can cover the rest of this sutta. So that is where the third aspect of this complete journey is mentioned. So that we will cover on next week. So if you have any questions related to today's Dhamma sermon or related to your practice, then this is the time for that.
Avasara Bhante, there's currently 5 questions.
Yeah.
Question number 1 or 5, mindful sitting. While I was doing sitting, I tried to practice Anapanasati Sutta that we learned a few weeks ago, mainly on the tip of my nostril. When I got up to the 4th step, which is releasing tension from the body, I lost my connection with the body. My body started to lose the sitting posture and slumped forward. I only realized when my head hit the table. I do not know what to do. Thank you, Bhante, for all your guidance. That's the end.
Yeah, I mean, you can apply some oil, I mean, since you have hit the table. So basically, I mean, if you sort of lost your balance, so these kind of little mistakes can happen. Actually, in the previous session also, someone has mentioned that his head was hit on the wall. So these kind of mistakes actually can happen, where we sometimes lose our balance. And on the other hand, our attention is refined and more concentrated onto one aspect, so therefore we lose the complete picture. The big picture is lost. As a result, we don't know where we are sitting, either we are close to a table or close to a wall, so that information is lost. So immediately after a bell ring or after you come back to the posture, you immediately do a kind of a change. And then you recognize, okay, I have lost the, sort of, I have hit the head on a wall or hit the head on a table or whatever it is. So likewise, these are sort of minor mistakes we encounter. So nothing to worry. These are simple mistakes, not a big harm. Main thing is, time to time, it is good to sort of retrospect, coming out of your experience and just look at yourself. What is going on? How am I doing? Is the mind concentrated or is the mind deluded? Is the mind distracted? Is the mind well refined or is it gross? Are there any thoughts going on, or is the mind clean? So likewise, so I mean, time to time, it is better come out of this ordinary or ongoing process and do a kind of a monitoring process time to time. Then you are sort of establishing mindfulness without too much involved in the ongoing process. So basically we have to maintain that sort of a balance, otherwise our attention get too closely involved in the process. At the beginning it is helpful in order to avoid distractions. Say for example, while walking, you are trying to hold that experience, you are trying to closely pay your attention to that experience. So that actually helps to avoid distractions. Say when your left leg is touching the ground, you are very closely observing it. Your right leg is touching the ground, you are very closely observing it. So that close observation, very coupled observation, is helpful in the beginning. But later, once fair amount of mindfulness is improved, then you have to decouple the process. Now you allow the thing to happen and you do a kind of a passive observation. You are not actively, effortfully observing, but rather you know the dose, you know the amount, you know how to maintain the balance, you know how to observe it without making a tension in the mind. And now you do a sort of a passive observation. It is not that you are not observing. It is not that you are distracted. You are really observing. But you know how to maintain a balance. There you have the big picture. You know what is really going on. At the same time, you know what is happening outside. So therefore, this kind of a sort of evolution is there in the meditation. So if you are able to properly handle this, balance this, then we are maturing. This is like driving a car. At the beginning, you need to put it into a lower gear so that a lot of petrol is given to come out of the, what you call the inertia. And then say now the car is moving. Now you are putting to a higher gear. And now car is moving further. Now speeding up. Now you are putting to another higher gear. So likewise, at the beginning you need a lot of effort. But in the middle, you need less effort. Because now the things are happening. Things are moving. And at the end, towards the end, you need even less effort. Because now mind has established mindfulness. Concentration has fairly developed. Mind and the whatever the ongoing process has properly coupled, synchronized. They are in harmony. So you don't need a lot of effort. So this kind of a proper balancing is necessary. Then only we can actually progress. Yeah, back to you, Chatu.
Question number 2 of 6. Mindful sitting. Dear Bhante, during the guided practice, Bhante always mentions that when the mindfulness is established, we can start looking at the breath, or rising and falling, etc. What is the gauge of determining this? What I do is check if my mind is settled by the indication that it is not running anywhere, but continuously keeping attention or focusing on the body. Is this enough, or is there anything I should be aware of to determine that the mindfulness is now established? Thank you for your valuable guidance. That's the end.
Yeah, basically what we use as a kind of a measurement is to come to the fourth level of of Anapanasati. If you are in Anapanasati, mindful breathing, you know there are four steps. Simple establishment of mindfulness, and then to recognize whether it is long or short, and then to understand the beginning, the middle and the end. And as a result, you come into the fourth stage where the breath calms down. So when the breath calms down, so that means that your mindfulness has fairly refined. Your mindfulness has becoming very precise. So that level of concentration, that level of precision may be useful. Suppose you are observing a feeling. So how to see the beginning of a feeling? Are there only single feeling or are there many feelings? So likewise, this scrutiny actually happens only when your mindfulness has well established and the concentration has fairly built up. So one level of measurement is to know that the breath has calmed down and now you can't distinguish whether it is in-breath or out-breath. To that level, mind has refined. To that level, unnecessary labels, perceptions has dropped. Only kind of a single sensation is there and that's it. And you know, this is the only the indication available and you can't distinguish whether this is in-breath or out-breath. So this is a fairly favorable or enough concentration we can use for the vipassana. Yeah, back to you, Chatur.
Yep, sorry. Question number 3 of 8. This is theory question. Dear Bhante, can you explain a bit about having removed covetousness and displeasure in regard to the world, which comes under the first section of today's sutta? Is this dropping other thoughts and coming back to the object as a discipline or something more grand or having a wider scope? That's the end.
Yeah, I mean, what your understanding is correct. So basically, we have various attachments towards the world. So you are thinking about your children, you are thinking about your parents, you are thinking about your country, whatever it is. So we have so many attachments. So those attachments, at least temporary, we have to keep aside, leave them aside, and that we can call as abhijja. So we simply avoid those kind of attachments, those kind of desires. And again, there may be various resentment. You don't like the present government. You don't like the corona infection. You don't like the neighbor. So there are so many different such kind of attitudes available in your mind. So various types of resentments available in the mind. But while you are doing meditation, you have to forget them. You have to leave them aside so that your mind comes to the middle. It becomes equanimous. Neither desiring to something and nor hating another thing. So there is no attachment and no hatred. And now the mind is balanced. So leaving aside covetousness and the displeasure, that means what you call vinaya loke abhijja domanassang, means that you are sort of maintaining that balance. Neither desirable and no hating anything, and your mind is in the equanimity, fair equanimity. So that is the desired, that is the, say, best level of mindfulness, or best level of state of mind, which we can maintain in order to continue our practice. Basically, the equanimity. Equanimity is the sort of the mature state of mind we have to maintain while we are doing vipassana.
Question number 4 of 10. This is actually a repeat from last week. It's on mindfulness in day-to-day activities. Dear Bhante, thank you very much for these valuable sessions. I am a doctor and I'm currently doing virtual clinics by telephoning patients due to COVID. It can be very stressful and takes a longer time than when I see the patient in the clinic. Any advice that you have for me to be mindful and calm and increase my efficiency will be much appreciated. That's the end of the question.
So I think certain things that I have learned is that if I am constantly looking at the screen, so I sometimes get little sort of a strain because always eyes has to be used, I have to be focused on the screen and all these things. But I mean, if the patient is talking to you and if you know there is nothing specifically you have to look at, then you can simply look at far while you talk. Talking is happening, the conversation is happening, but you don't need to specifically look at the screen. Because if you are focusing your attention onto a very small area inside the screen, it can create a little strain in the eyes. So it can make you a little stressful, somewhat tiresome. And on the other hand, if you are having kind of a resistance for this process, now you are doing your job, you are doing sort of a help. But on the other hand, if the through the mind you hate it, I don't want to do it, I want to go to the hospital, I want to personally meet the patient, why this is not possible. So likewise, a lot of sort of resistance is going on in the mind. So this resistance is making a lot of unnecessary burden to the mind, unnecessary sort of reaction in the mind, and that also makes you really tiresome. But on the other hand, if you think positively, so I am helping this patient, even though I can't go to the hospital, okay, I have the opportunity at least to talk with him and even to see his face. I mean, we didn't have these facilities in the good old days, and the patients are dying without the assistance of the doctors because there is no way of communication. But now, due to the improvement or advancement of the technology, we can think it positively. We have the facility to even to talk with the patient, and even to see his face and how to sort of do at least some amount of investigation, not to the level of you personally observe, but rather at least to some extent to get some connectivity with the patient. So therefore we can sort of look at it positively, and doing it in a compassionate attitude with a pleasant mind, rather than having any resistance towards the process, and engage it with some fun, with some jokes, and you know, having some fun while talking. You put a joke while the discussion. Likewise, you are sort of finding out various methods not to make it too serious. I mean, if you do it too seriously, that is also making it a little hard, little tiresome. But time to time you crack a joke with the patient and you sort of encouraging him or her. So likewise, you can be free from stress, free from tension, and that way I feel you can do a better job. What do you think, Chatu?
Question. So question number 5 of 10 is a general question. And so, sir, I think it's a repeat of from last week as well. Venerable sir, during reflection reporting Kamatan sessions at the retreats, we hear about the structured way of presenting the meditation experiences. For a beginner, is there a clear benefit on presenting the experience in a simple and crisp manner, which will lead to better understanding in the future? Appreciate Bhante's advice on how we should present meditation experience with metta. That's the end.
Actually, it is not a sort of, you don't need to write a thesis on it, write a sort of a full article on it. Rather, I mean, if you can simply mention what has happened while walking, your own experience, you can simply mention your own experience on what has happened while walking, and your own experience on what has happened while sitting, and how much effort you have spent while engaging day-to-day activities, while engaging various day-to-day activities, how much you pay attention, how mindfully you did it. So these are the three aspects we basically expect in a report to cover all these three aspects: the walking session, sitting session, as well as the day-to-day activities. If you can cover these, that is more than enough. And it is not necessary to write a very comprehensive report, but if you can write it concisely and say it is important always to mention what is the primary object you are using as a beginner, whether it is anapanasati or say rising and falling or posture, whatever it is in the sitting. And while walking, where you are keeping your attention, what is the primary object, what is the method you are utilizing. And these are the basics that we are sort of expecting, essential items that we are expecting. and how well you are able to establish mindfulness, and what are the distractions, what are the obstacles that you encounter, and what are the methods or strategies that you have used to overcome these obstacles. So those you can mention, I mean, not in detail, I mean, just in several words. So that would be enough.
Question number 6 of 10. This is a general question. Most Venerable Bhante, this is only a humble request. Could the PDF be circulated or uploaded before the Sunday session so we can have a printout to make notes during the Sunday sermon? I looked last night and the PDF attached to the notification that was emailed yesterday only had the previous sermon, but nothing about the Vibhanga Sutta as we discussed today. Most grateful for your guidance, Bhante. That's the end.
Yeah, sure. Actually, someone actually has requested that. But actually, I uploaded it today morning. So if you checked it today morning, you were able to locate it. I uploaded it in today morning, but not on yesterday. I'll try to upload it a little earlier so that you are able to take a printout. Yeah.
Question number 7 of 10. This is walking mindfulness. I try hard to do walking meditation. I am aware of each step and how my foot touches the floor, but it just goes on without any change. Still don't get how this leads to sati or deep concentration. I wonder whether my technique is right. Your advice will be much appreciated, Bhante. Thank you for your help given to us always. That's the end.
Yeah, actually, if you simply start analyzing the walking process, you can't really continue because it is too much thinking. I mean, it is not by thinking you can develop mindfulness. Rather, you have to maintain the mind as much as possible quiet, and you have to pay attention to various sensations. You have to pay attention to where the foot is touching so that your thinking is stopped, thinking is sort of faded away, but fair close attention is drawn or placed, applied on the foot. So that is how we have to continue. So this is difficult for us, for someone who, I mean, not only you, but I mean, all of us nowadays, we are thinking too much. We are trying to analyze, we are trying to investigate, or rather, we are trying to rationalize the whole process. How it is happening, how it is happening, how this is possible. So likewise, before jumping to the water, we are thinking about it. But on the other hand, if you jump to the water and you start to swim, something like that. So therefore, don't think too much, don't think too seriously. Rather, jump to the say, Sakman Maluwa. Just go to the walking path and like a beginner. Always start like a beginner. And always do it like a child. There are not too much information is available, but you become a kind of very innocent, very sort of humble person, and you are simply trying to keep your attention on the leg. So very simple process. Actually, this simplicity is the one taking us to more profound understanding. If we are complicating the whole thing, then it is difficult. Yeah, back to you, Chatu.
Question number 8 of 10. Walking mindfulness. Dear sir, when I do walking practice, after about 10 minutes of being mindful on the sensations on the sole of the foot, I start getting a small pain on my shoulder. I can say during this time my practice is progressing quite well and the mind is fairly collected. This happens every time, and now it's been going on for almost 2 months. I try to take the pain in the shoulder as a sign of getting more mindful and try to stay with that pain. The pain inside the shoulder does not grow after a certain intensity, but stays there. I keep walking with this sensation. Is this the right approach? With metta, that's the end.
Yeah, this is possible. I mean, basically, there are these kind of various pains and sort of this may be possible, and you are sort of looking at it. And one day it may disappear as well. I mean, there are many stories. People are sort of keeping attention on many different types of say feelings. It may be painful feelings, it may be really extreme pains, and they really sort of brave enough to tackle it, to handle it. And after some time, say several weeks, it may disappear. So I mean, it's very difficult to sort of come out with a plan, because these are not in our control. And if you very well know there's a pain arising at a given time, you can check. One option is to change the posture. Say if you think that your posture is somewhat strenuous and a little painful and say not that comfortable, and in the middle this can lead to a kind of a pain, kind of a neck pain or shoulder pain or whatever it is. On the other hand, so if you change the posture, you can change the place, you can change the posture and look at it. I mean, you can test whether it is arising as well, still arising. If it is still arising, then it is not the posture. Then maybe some another reason. Then you can simply accept it. This is the way it is. This body is nothing but a sort of a pain. This body has so many pains. And only when the mind is refined, concentrated, then only you can recognize this pain. It may be available throughout the day. But only when your mind is concentrated, then only you are able to recognize it. So that is the difference. So you can't get rid of it, because this body is constantly subjected to various pains. So that's the nature of this body. But since while meditating our mind become concentrated, so that concentrated mind has the capacity to recognize these pains. Little pains appear like somewhat considerable intense pain because of the concentrated mind. So that you have to take into advantage rather than sort of neglecting them, or rather than sort of looking at them negatively, you take them positively. Okay, this pain is a source of observation. They are helping me to understand the nature of various phenomena. So likewise, use it as a raw material for your practice.
Question number 9 of 10. It's a general question. Shouldn't we be mindful in the micro level as well as the macro level? If not, what is the use? That's the end.
Yeah, both are there. So that's why I mean, so macro level, suppose if you consider Vedana Anupassana, so at the beginning, suppose you recognize there's a pleasurable feeling. That's all. So you are in the macro level. And later you even go to the micro level. So you recognize, you scrutinize. Okay, it is not a single pain, but there are a collection of pains. And each pain, each little pain, each minute pain has their own nature. Now you are going to the micro level. So this is one aspect. And on the other hand, as we develop mindfulness, you have the capacity to see the both sides. If necessary, you can pay attention precisely onto one selected object. On the other hand, you have a sort of overview of everything. So these both are available, definitely. It is not that we are neglecting anything. Both are, we are utilizing depending on the circumstances.
Part to that question I just received. This was based on the situation where the yogi hits the head.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's what I tried to explain to him. Where if we are paying too close attention to one thing, so then we are having the micro level mindfulness. There are sometimes, if you are too attached to it, if you are too concentrated to it, there's a possibility of you are losing the macro level. But on the other hand, if you have both, so you know there's a sort of micro level mindfulness, and later, once you are sort of emerging from it, you finish your observation. After that, you have to come back to the macro level. There you recognize, okay, now my head is here, my arms are here, my legs are here. And you know the time, you know where you are, and you come back to the macro level. So therefore, while you engage in very subtle, refined mindfulness, we are dealing with the micro level. And later, once you emerge from that, we have to well connected with to the macro level. So therefore, immediately after you coming out of the micro level, therefore don't try to immediately get up or immediately try to take a decision, because you are not balanced. You are in a sort of a micro level analysis. Once you emerge from such micro level analysis, you have to come to the macro level, and you know where you are. You are now in the conventional level, and you can slowly adapt to the situation. It's a kind of a balancing. So if you are not balanced in the process, if you are too attached to the micro level, then actually you have lost the balance. So both are necessary, and as you have mentioned. Yeah.
Question number 10, this is the last one. General question. Devanubhu Bhante. This is a general question. And now avoid conflicts with others. That is, if I disagree, I keep quiet and move the disagreement out of my mind. Or I listen till the end and express my point to correct a mistake or concept. And generally, my conversations are around day-to-day duties or on Dhamma points. This has helped me to have a clean mind as I have no conflict. Bhante, will this practice uproot conflicts or suppress conflict feelings? Appreciate your advice. Thank you with metta. That's the end.
I think both are possible. You can avoid conflicts, and again, you know how to deal with conflicts and not to get involved with conflicts. So there are many aspects available. Now, if you see, say, Madhupindika Sutta of Majjhima Nikaya, Buddha says very clearly his path, his view is to be free from conflicts, not to have any conflicts with others. And again, when you are developing mindfulness, you start to feel another person, sort of what you call as the literacy. Emotional literacy going to be improved so that you can feel another person. Empathy is arising. So therefore, less conflicts are possible on such situation, because you can understand another person's feelings, his motives, his emotions, you can understand, so that you can little calm down. You can sort of sympathize the person, so that you sort of, you can look at the problem, the issue from someone else's shoes. As much as possible, in that way, you can avoid conflicts. And it is not always necessary to win the situation. I mean, you can argue with another person and win. But on that situation, you may lose the friendship. So are you always trying to win a situation and lose the friendship? Or are you even like to give the victory to the other person and to maintain the friendship? So these are sort of things that we can balance. So if we are thinking too egoistic, then we always want to win. We always want to surrender the other person, and we always want to become the boss, become the head. So that's a wrong attitude actually we have. But on the other hand, if we see the situation and if we think, okay, the other person also telling a valid point, so maybe that is also true. I can allow that to happen, or I can sort of let it happen and see. And then if it is going wrong, maybe I can implement my way, my suggestion. Oh, that is one thing. On the other hand, suppose someone else is telling another sort of wrong view, and you understand that you are having the better view, you have the correct view. There you can sort of diplomatically, you can try to convince the other person. And if he is not convinced, then it's difficult. I mean, you have to go to either arguments or to conflicts. So that is actually aggravate the situation. So rather than coming to that level, you can simply leave aside, okay, I mean, you take your time, you say, you can tell him, okay, you take your time. Maybe once you further develop, you can come to a same level of understanding. This is my view, I mean, but I can't agree with you, but I mean, that's it. I have no conflict with you either. We can live with disagreements, but without conflicts, without fights, without quarrels. But disagreements are possible. Yeah.
So that concludes all the questions for today, Bhante.
Good.
So I'll wrap up. So we had some good questions, as we usually do, and we hope you keep sending them through because they're very good, and not only helping yourself but everyone else here. We'd like to thank Bhante for giving up valuable time for this program and to pass our merits. Also to the organizers working behind the scenes to make this program work, as well as all the other people seen and unseen participating or helping the program. And last of all, I'd like to thank the people who are involved, because without you, this program would not happen. So with that, I'd like to conclude for today. Teruan Sarnai.
Teruan Sarnai. Suki Hotu.